Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:44 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is July 21st, and I thought we'd kick off with China Evergrande because it is accelerating lower, and it looks like it's going to default on a couple of its mortgages. It's one of the major construction companies and property developers in China, so this is also representative of the lack of available liquidity for these kinds of companies and the difficulties they're getting into, as the implicit guarantee that was offered to them from the government that whatever debt they took out they wouldn't really have to worry about, it starts to evaporate. But it also raises the question of, well, will the Chinese government really allow China Evergrande to go bust? I think it's extremely unlikely. So we're probably coming quite close to the next form of intervention where some form of liquidity will be made available as if out of nowhere. Now, the price has just about unwound all of the advance from the beginning of 2017. So the chances are that we're coming back into a potential area of support. Doesn't necessarily mean that this is suddenly going to turn into a secular bull market where the price is going to exceed the peaks put in 2017, but I don't think that the Chinese are going to allow the default situation in the property sector to get out of control. So it's suggestive that there is the potential, at least, that China is coming towards the end of its tightening and that they may be more inclined to make liquidity available going forward. And that's important because capital is both global and mobile. And when money is created in one place, well, then it tends to move around to the most attractive potential alternative investments where there is yield or capital appreciation on offer. Now, when we think about the wider Chinese market, well, the stock market has been pretty much inert, and it was in mildly positive territory today, and there is more or less an upward bias to trading over the course of the last 5 months, but certainly nothing in the way of fireworks. What we did start to see today was some interest returning into Bitcoin, and the price at one point was up in excess of $2,000. As we approach the close, it's closing probably around the $1,800 level up on the day, so we've had a significant bounce from around the 30,000 level, and this is the sixth time that we've had a similar bounce from this kind of area. Now, the question, of course, is there going to be follow-through on the upside? The primary rationale for why there was a bounce today is we're back in a region of previous support, and then you've had supportive news or statements made by people like Elon Musk, who quite notably said that he may pump but will not dump. So he's certainly he's a person around whom bulls rally in Bitcoin, and he said that he owns some, Tesla owns some, and SpaceX owns some, and that he's no intention of selling, and that Tesla may accept Bitcoin in return for cars in future, but not until it's verifiable that 50% of supply comes from renewable sources. So that's obviously what might only really be described as a backhanded way of lending support to the market. But I think more important than that is we've had a broad return to a risk-on environment. So the S&P 500 was up in a dynamic manner yesterday and followed through on the upside in here today. The VIX index continues to contract, and it has now pulled back to where below the close on Friday, so this looks like another lower rally high, and our lower major rally high, as I should really say, and that's also been quite positive for small caps. And The Russell 2000 in particular has been going sideways now for the last 6 months and has bounced pretty emphatically from the region of the trend mean. We've had a pattern of underperformance from mid caps and small caps over the course of the last few months, but we're now seeing a pretty significant rebound off their intra-week lows. So this is rather positive overall. And we're seeing this similar kind of activity coming across all markets. So mid caps are starting to return to performance. The second section in Japan was up in positive territory today, though not quite able to hold all of the bounce off the open. But nonetheless, we're still trading above the peak put in back in March. And the big question outstanding with regard to whether US markets outperform or we see a return of a more concerted pattern of outperformance by Europe and Japan and emerging markets, it was always going to be about just how well can the dollar rally. So the dollar got all the way back up to test the peak from March, April, and today we have the bear, I think, conditions for a downside key reversal. So it did move to an incremental new high and is closing below the low of the previous day. So downside follow-through tomorrow would confirm a peak of at least near-term significance. And I think it's also relevant to pay attention to the Bloomberg Dollar Index because it has more currencies in it and it gives a greater weighting to the renminbi, for example. It's got a much clearer example of a downside key reversal, so a bigger move to new highs and a bigger move downwards subsequently. And I do think that this looks like a completing top formation. It's a type 3 top, which is defined by ranging time and size. So the dollar started to lose momentum from 2015. We could still argue that it was in a bull market from 2017, and it was still strengthening all the way through 2018 and into 2019. But since the peak panic period of the pandemic, then the dollar's been trending down. We've had a modest rally over the course of the last couple of months. So now it's do or die. If this is a recovery for the dollar and we're going to see it trend back up towards the upper side of this 6-year range, well, it's going to have to at least sustain a move above 1150. On the other hand, if this is a developing top formation and all we're seeing here is some distribution before a decline, then the dollar will fail in this area and then push back down again. Well, emerging markets, Europe, Japan, basically everything outside of the US will benefit from a weaker dollar. It's also beneficial for commodities. And oil prices rebounded pretty emphatically in here today, so almost countermanding the big decline that we saw on Monday. And at least signaling that we have a low of near-term significance. So we've had quite a choppy market environment where we have this very large tail on the candle for this week, and now this is still a sequence of higher reaction lows. Some evidence is at least clear of support coming through in the region of the previous peak, and we could see some additional push higher from here. In normal circumstances, it would at least be enough to suggest that a retest of the $80 area is now more likely than not. Then we can think about natural gas, which was at a 2-year high in here today, and it's been in this base formation for more than a decade. And I think when we think about how could it or how could we justify an argument for why natural gas prices should be breaking out of this base formation? Well, on the one hand, we'd need to see a significant source of new demand and an inability to meet that demand in the short term. Well, we saw something approaching that kind of rationale between about 2000 and 2008. Then the significant sources of new supply started to come into the market from shale gas. And now the question, of course, is what is driving this price higher? Well, it's lower inventories. With such extremely warm weather and with the upset to the global supply chain that we had last year, then there's not enough of natural gas being laid away for the winter. So it is setting the stage for another one of these short-term pops on the upside, like what we saw in 2013-14 and then between 2018 and 19. And beyond that, it would need to sustain a move above the $6 area to complete the base formation. The other thing that's, I think, relevant is that the big spikes that we've seen in 2005 and in 2007 and 8, well, they were due to hurricanes, and the ability of hurricanes to have an outsized effect on natural gas prices has been significantly diminished because most of the new supply has happened onshore. So, therefore, expecting those kinds of significant spikes again would require a supply shock of similar magnitude to a massive hurricane hitting production facilities in the Gulf of Mexico. And that's not quite apparent. One thing that I think is particularly relevant, and certainly from a water perspective, is that we see lots of news about these heat waves in the west of the USA and in the northeast of the USA. And I saw data yesterday that the summers in Boston are now more like the summers in New York, and the summers in New York are more like the summers in Washington, D.C., and the summers in Washington are more like the way they used to be in Atlanta. So there's a pattern of warming along the eastern seaboard of the U.S., and they're having a lot of warm weather and volatile weather there at present as well. But in the southern USA, it's been quite benign, and the heat normally associated with the summers hasn't arrived. So it's been warm, but certainly not the kind of scorching hot weather that people are accustomed to in the summer. So it's also been rainy. There's been plenty of rain, and what that also suggests is that there isn't going to be any problem with access to water for drilling operations. One thing that I thought was particularly interesting as well is when we think about consumers and debt and whether we're having inflation. Well, people I'm talking to just who have normal jobs are complaining mightily about inflation. They find inflation absolutely everywhere, whether it is in the gasoline markets or whether it is in the food markets. And picked up my daughter from rowing camp this morning, and we took her to Subway. And the thing that I know is that they've always ordered exactly the same sandwich, and that sandwich has now risen in price by about $2. So that's approximately 15 to 20%, and then the there's the ability to leave a tip in Subway, which was never it never expected before. So that adds an additional premium. So we're seeing that these fast casual restaurants where the prices are increasing, we're seeing the cost of just about everything that normal people buy increasing. And then something that I learned today at the investment committee meeting at Nevada Trust Company, because the trust company has been running a money market operation with Capital One, and I thought it was particularly interesting to hear what Capital One had to say. Their share has been doing particularly well, and they've been paying higher money market rates over the course of the last year, and they've been highly successful in acquiring deposits. And they're now reporting much more demand for credit card services and loan services. So that was reasonably predictable, but it is, I think, gratifying to hear that there's at least some evidence to back it up, that what we are in fact seeing is that consumers are beginning to spend. And that is supportive of the inflationary environment. And the big question for a lot of people has been whether the big pile of savings that were held off the market would start to be redeployed into attaining a better standard of living. So, inflationary pressures are still present in the economy, and I hear reports of dealerships like Mercedes asking for an additional $5,000 service fee to supply a car to a consumer. So that is also contributing to this inflation in the or at least the perception of inflation. And of course, perceptions of inflation are at least as important as actual inflation because it affects sentiment. So we're starting to see bond yields pushing back upwards, and this is also representative of the fact that if we have more credit at creation in the economy, it creates growth. If there's more growth, then there's less demand for safe havens. Then, when yields start pushing back up towards the upper side of this range, around 1.8%, well, then that will be considered to be a time when people will become interested in inflationary pressures once more. One of the primary reasons that yields were compressing was because of supply and demand. And there was a lot of bonds that were issued in the first part of the year, so the yield rose. There have been less bonds supplied in the last quarter because government receipts have come in faster and better than expected. Fewer bonds has reduced the supply situation and made them more attractive to investors. Now we're seeing additional liquidity being pushed into the market, and not least because the debt limits in the USA are about to be renegotiated, and the Treasury has got this large quantity of money that it needs to spend in order to meet some of the criteria that have been imposed upon it. So it means there's going to be more liquidity, less demand for safe havens. That's the primary reason why we continue to see demand coming through for stocks. Well, with less outright safe haven demand, gold was in mildly negative territory today. I think it's particularly important to highlight that the price continues to hold the $1,800 area, and we have a higher reaction low. Now, if it can push up and out of this short-term range and exceed the $1,825 area and push on to a new recovery high, well, that will be supportive of the view that we are that the correction is pretty much over and that we are moving back into more of an appreciation environment. This has been a lengthy consolidation. There have been times over the entire bull market up from the early 2000s to the peak in 2011 when gold went sideways or went into corrective phases that lasted anything up to 18 months. So we're really not that far away from the 1 year mark, and nobody wanted to believe that that was even remotely possible back in August of last year. And here we are, nearly a year onwards, and prices are still holding steady. I think one of the most underappreciated portions of the market remains the gold miners. And with prices still in the region of $1,800, then these companies have got margins that are on par with software companies, and this is a clear value proposition. Now, what we're also starting to see is that the copper price has been steadying, and I think that there is certainly potential for additional upside in copper. It's a secular bull market candidate that has got a clear rationale behind it, so there is certainly potential for additional upside. Now, when we think about the copper gold ratio, well, we've had a significant amount of movement in the difference between the two metals. There's obviously secular bull market arguments for both. The more powerful one at present is in copper. So we've had a very significant advance. But the other point, of course, is that this is a volatile suite of instruments. So this at the moment is right at the upper side of this range, and it's still unwinding the short-term overbought condition. During secular bull markets, like we had up from 2000 to approximately 2006, copper outperforms. And it certainly outperformed last time, and I think that there is clear potential that copper will outperform on this occasion as well. And it doesn't mean that gold has to go down, but rather that gold is the steadier asset, the less volatile asset compared to something like copper. And this doesn't look like much more than some consolidation within a broad environment where we're going to have significant new demand for commodities that can feed the renewable, the demand growth driver represented by the zero carbon initiatives. So when we think about the outlook for carbon, well, it's certainly trading around the 50 euro level right now, and we've had some correction over the course of the last couple of months, but it is steadying and it's politically mandated, so it's unlikely that prices are going to pull back in a dynamic manner. We also saw in here today that the semiconductors index has continued to rebound. ASML in particular was quite steady, although it wasn't quite able to hold on to all of its advance. But the semiconductors index has rebounded in an emphatic fashion, and it continues to hold the sequence of higher reaction lows. So, if we are back in a risk-on environment, then there's certainly the potential that semiconductors can go up a bit more, at least until supply starts to really come back into the market. And at that point, we'll quite likely see the cyclicality of the market become much more relevant, but perhaps not right away. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.